September 29, 2012, in Rundavan, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 29-26. So first I'm just going to briefly cover some of the minor points in this section. Text 29, and this is coming from the verses. Let's read through the verses first, and then we'll do the verses first. 28. My Lord, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. Of course, it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work although you are inactive, that you take birth although you are the vital force and the unborn. You yourself descend among animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. My dear Krishna, Yasoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes, and you were afraid, although fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. Others say that since both Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshiping, and so on, in order that the conditioned soul suffering from material pains might take advantage and gain liberation. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. This last verse, does it remind you of any other famous verse in the Bhagavatam? Reminds me of the verse in Gopi Gita, Tavakatam Mutam Tapadivana, very similar. Okay, so first Kunti is talking about how Krishna is bewildering, and then she talks about the reasons people give for Krishna's appearance, ending with hearing and chanting, and the glories of hearing and chanting. So some minor points in 29, again this is coming from the verses, the purports, and Prabhupada's lectures on these verses, as well as other commentaries, especially Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, is that our fighting spirit comes from Krishna. I've heard that so many times, but somehow when I was reading it this time, it really struck me. Because we tend to think of fighting as always bad, isn't it? Don't fight, just be peaceful. But I thought Krishna fights, and he likes to fight. So this liking to fight sometimes is also coming from Krishna. It has some reality. Also in 29, the word sadhu in Prabhupada indicates this means someone who's transcendental, not just someone who's pious, not just someone who's nice. Many religions today, their idea of a saintly person is just a nice person, pious person, takes good care of his family, etc. In 30, Prabhupada emphasizes that Krishna's greatness is both being bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest, not only being the biggest. In 31, really glorifying the perfection of Vrindavan, and Prabhupada mentioning Krishna swallowing the forest fire. I don't know why he picked that particular lila, but it's one of my favorite lilas. We made a little children's book on that lila. We have a whole seminar we give on that lila. So it struck me that Prabhupada mentioned that. Of course, there's two forest fires. One which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says represents fighting between devotees, and one that the Thakur says represents the destruction of the atheists and the bad aspects of Kali Yuga. In 32, there's just simply, in the Sanskrit, there's just a reference to a pious king, and Prabhupada said there are many pious kings, like Nala, but this must be referring to Yudhisthira, because Nala was not associated with Krishna. If any of you know the story of Nala, it's in the Mahabharata. Interesting for various other reasons. And then in text 34, in Prabhupada's lecture, he says something wonderful. He says that the living body, the life, a living body is lighter in weight than a dead body. So this English has two meanings of the word light. One is light versus dark, and the other is light versus heavy. So Prabhupada was saying that the soul is light, as in not heavy, and a living body, he said, floats on the water, a dead body sinks. And he says, if you have a living child, you can just hold them by a hand, but if they're dead, they're very heavy. Sinking, even sleeping children are quite heavy. And Prabhupada said that when the soul is out of the body, in 1 second it can go to Vaikuntha because it's so light. That was really nice. So today is about how are we going to realize Krishna, the mystery of Krishna. So I need to ask you, why should we care about this topic?
Why should we care?
Care. Why do you care?
That's the most important thing.
Why?
We all try to love Krishna, so if we don't realize him or don't know more about him, then how do we do that?
Okay, so I have to know something about Krishna in order to love him. Any other reasons? I just want to know if you're going to pay attention today and why. Because maybe I'm going to talk about something that none of you are interested in. So why do you care about the mysteries of Krishna's appearance?
That'd be interesting.
Interesting why?
Because no other entity or anybody has similar. They are just really attractive. That's why I want to hear.
Very nice. More. Okay, yes.
We want to hear how sweet Krishna is.
You want to know how sweet Krishna is? Okay. You want to please the devotees. You want to know how Krishna pleases his devotees.
And also by hearing his bhajan activities, we can understand that he's not from this world. He's like God.
We'll become convinced that Krishna is God. And then maybe we'll surrender?
Yeah.
Any other reasons why anybody wants to listen to today's class? I mean, I don't want you to be here just because it's on the schedule. Yes?
By hearing about Krishna's his pastimes, his activities and birth, we naturally get attracted because they are all transcendental and they are
more actually become attractive.
Attractive, and then only for attraction from this material or material attachments can automatically be diverted.
Why do we want to get rid of our material attachments?
They ultimately give us suffering. They ultimately give us suffering. They are all perishable.
They are all perishable.
All perishable, they ultimately give us suffering. And there's no other way. No other way
to get rid of these attachments.
Transfer this attachment.
We want to transfer the attachment to Krishna instead of having these weights, of these material attachments. Well, yes.
Instead of reading mundane storybooks or newspaper, reading about Krishna and hearing about Krishna, it gives a lot of sweet memories about his pastors. And it's also very transcendental.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
There are so many contradictory things in Krishna's pastimes and appearance, and they cannot be resolved by hearing and understanding these from his scriptures and acharyas.
So many contradictory things. Actually, that's a lot of what we're focusing today is on these contradictions and mysteries.
Yeah.
Which Kunti's saying, I don't understand them. You know, who can understand Krishna's contradictions? Right? And this, of course, as bewildered philosophers and theologians for so long, all these contradictions that have to do with God. to try to understand God. What do you speak of Krishna? That Krishna is the most pure, and yet he dances with the gopis and he's stealing the butter and so many things. All right. And the main effect we're going to get is we're going to... Kunti says, she says, very soon. Does that sound good to everybody? In text 36, Achirena, very soon. And very soon what will happen? Pasyanti. We will see. One will see you very soon. And one will see what? Pada Ambujam. One will see your... Here instead of Pankaja, it's Ambuja. Ambu means water. Ambu means water. Ambuja was born from the lotus. Before she talked about the Pankaja, was born from the mud. Now she's talking about the Ambuja. It's another word for lotus. Was born from the lotus. So we will very soon see your Padu Ambuja. Very soon. Everybody would like to see Krishna's lotus feet very soon?
Yes.
All right. And she also says we'll get free from birth and death, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that's just a side issue once you see Krishna's feet.
Different Padmaja and Pankaja and Ambuja,
such a difference. Panka means mud.
Yeah.
Ambu means water.
Yeah.
So both mean lotus.
Yeah.
The one means the mud-born and one means the water-born. So, and many words for lotus. The Eskimos, they don't like to be called Eskimos anymore. They like to be called Inuits. You know who they are?
You know
what I mean? The people who live in the far north and they build houses out of ice. So it says they have 30 different words for snow. So in Sanskrit, there's so many words for lotus. So Pankaja, mud-born, and Ambuja, water-born. And so why does Krishna come? So you could say Krishna comes to kill the demons. It's text 33. Krishna's coming to kill the demons. So the Prabhupada said Krishna can kill the demons easily. All he needs is a famine or a flood, or he doesn't need to personally come. That's very minor for him. For us, that may be a very big deal. Did you ever wonder why, when you try to do Krishna's work, you try to be in Krishna's service, that sometimes there's these big monsters that come in your path? Ever wondered why? You know, not enough money, not enough resources, trouble from the government, sometimes trouble from the other devotees. You know, so it's not just that you go to do Krishna's service and everything is always easy. Have you noticed this, or is this just my experience? So why are there these obstacles? So Krishna can come and destroy them and be glorified. So he likes to do that. And the bigger the obstacle, the bigger the glory for Krishna. In this section, Srila Prabhupada says Krishna is the hero in all circumstances. So Krishna comes to destroy the obstacles, the big giants of obstacles in the path of the devotees. He likes to be the hero. And he likes to do that personally. He enjoys doing that. He doesn't have to come personally to do that, but it's his pleasure to do that. And then in 34, to stop the overburden on the earth of materialistic people. So it was in this context that Srila Prabhupada talked about how spirit is light and matter is heavy. Materialistic people are heavy. They're almost like walking dead people. You know, they're very heavy, and earth feels just like it's much more difficult for the mother to carry a sleeping child. If you've, and not how many of you have children, but if you've ever carried a sleeping child or an awake child, the sleeping child is very heavy. So Mother Earth also feels this burden from the sleeping entities, Jeev Jago. They're heavy to carry around. Then to please his devotees, to glorify his devotees. So he comes for that reason. In 32, Kunti mentions, who does she mention in 32? Which devotees? Yudhisthiran. Yadu. In 33, who does she mention?
Vasudeva
and Devaki. And in 34, who does she mention? Brahma, who's your own son. Right? That Brahma is unborn. Prabhupada comments at length about Brahma being unborn. And yet he's Krishna's son. So he comes from the lotus. He's not born in an ordinary way. Of course, we're all unborn, but his material body is not born in the usual way. So Krishna came to glorify his devotees, and we could list so many devotees. This list is not meant to be exhaustive. It's not that these are the only devotees Krishna appeared to please. And for his own pastimes and his own pleasure, which is mentioned both in text 29 and text 34, which is, you could say, the real reason he comes, because he wants to. By the way, that's a very nice way to live. We are also souls, and we should also be doing things because we want to. Doing things because you have to is not a pleasant way to live. Better to do the right things because you have to than to do the wrong things because you want to. But better than that is to do the right things because you want to. If you're going through life, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this, you will not have a very happy life. We are meant to be, like Krishna, playful. We are part of Krishna. We are meant to be playful. We are meant to be happy. Krishna wants us to be happy. He doesn't want us to go through life, I have to, I have to, I have to. If you catch yourself thinking or saying, I'm doing this because I have to, my humble suggestion is think about why you want to. Because everything is a choice. What is there that's not a choice? What is there that we actually have to do? I can think of two things only that we have to do, yes.
Die and
take birth. No, you're not the body. Not jayate mito vakadachi. Nayam bhutha bhavita bhanabhuya. Ajo nitya sasvato yam brahma. Nanyate animanesha. You go back to the Bhakti Shastri class. You don't take birth and you don't die. I'm sorry. I wasn't really criticizing you. What do we have to do?
Our responsibility towards our parents.
Oh, for goodness sakes. No, that's your choice. What do you have to do that you have no choice in at all?
Serve Krishna.
You have to serve. You have to serve Krishna either directly or indirectly. You have to serve. We have no choice. We must serve. We must give. We are givers by nature. We are givers and servers. We must serve. We have no option. You cannot say, I don't want to serve. By the way, why are we servers by nature? It must be to Krishna, who also must be a servant by nature. And we can see Krishna is giving a lot more than any of us can give. Krishna is giving food to every living entity and air, and I mean so many things. How much is Krishna giving compared to what I'm giving? So Krishna is really giving, 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 and of course he's unlimited in his giving. Om Purnamada Purnamida. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vishishite. Even you take complete, he's complete. So we have to give, we have to serve. We cannot be takers, we must be givers. What else must we do? Something we absolutely must do, we have no choice about. We cannot say, I'm sorry, I won't do this. Exist! Very good. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future will any of us cease to be. I don't know the Sanskrit for that. So we have to exist and we have to serve. Those things we must do, and everything else, my dear friends, is a choice. Now, there may be consequences. If you don't serve your parents nicely, you may suffer. But it's still a choice. So Krishna comes to this world because he wants to. He doesn't have to. He chooses to. a very, very simple way to make your life at least 10 times happier is whenever you say or think, I have to, stop and say, no, I am choosing to. And I choose to do this because I want something. Now, I remember speaking like this to one devotee who was terrified of ever considering that he was choosing to do something. It was a thing in particular. He was choosing to give a lot of money to a particular project. He says, I have to give it. I said, why do you have to? He said, you're choosing to. He said, no, I have to. He said, as soon as I say, I said, what are you afraid of? He says, I'm afraid that if I say I will choose to, then I will not do it anymore. So if we really look at what we choose to do, one of two things will happen. Some things we will just start choosing not to do once we realize it's a choice. And by the way, that may be a very good thing. One devotee who'd been writing to me, she's been in one temple for quite some time, and she was writing to me about how unhappy she was there. And I was talking, just like I was talking the other day, that we have to be situated according to our nature. And I was asking her about her nature. She says, I'm a preacher. She said, well, here I can't do any preaching. I'm just, doing other sorts of services. And I said, well, why can't you do what you want to do? Oh, well, I have to be here. This person is depending on me. That person is depending on me. I said, just decide you're going to do what you love and Krishna will help you. And of course, he did. As soon as she decided she wanted to preach, she said, no, I'm going to preach. Then all the doors opened for her. It was quite interesting. All of her half-dues vanished. And even the people she thought were depending on her said, yes, you should definitely do that. What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here another minute. Go and do what you're supposed to be doing. So when we really look at our life, if there's some things that we say, no, I really don't choose this. There's nothing here that I want. Then you can say, then this is not something I should be doing. And other things say, why am I choosing this? It's so liberating. Say, why am I choosing to do this? What do I want? Maybe I'm choosing this because I want to please my guru. I'm choosing this because I want to be Krishna conscious. I'm choosing this because I care about my parents or something like that. We should also be like that. Krishna is not particularly interested in unwilling slaves dragging chains around. It's not the kind of servants he wants. He wants servants who are there, just like I asked you all why you care about this topic. So I really don't want anyone in this class because, well, my temple president said I need to get a Bhakti Vaibhava degree in order to do this service, and I really couldn't care less, and I'd rather be in, Singapore, and here I am in Vrindavan, and I don't really care about it. It's terrible to teach people who are in that mood. That's the real challenge when you teach children, by the way, because because children generally don't want to be there. When you're teaching children, a lot of your work is just convincing them that they should be there. But with adults, you hope that everyone's there because they want to be there. And, I've often thought for our classes, we should, like they do in churches, we should put the topic, advertise the topic. That would really, and then people can come if they want to or not, and that would push the speakers to come up with interesting and relevant topics. So his own pleasure. This, my dear friends, this is the essence of spontaneous love of God. We're all wanting this, right? Yes?
Yes?
Is to serve Krishna for no other reason than I want to serve Krishna. Why? Because I just want to. Because it's so nice. Why? Because I love him. Why? I just love him. That's where we want to go. We don't want to be, and I'm doing this because I have to. Even if we're saying, I'm doing this because it says in the Shastra, it should still be, I want to follow the Shastra. Therefore, the adhikar for Vaidhi Bhakti is faith in the Shastra. I want to achieve the goal. I'm sure you've heard many speakers say how it's important to know our goal, right? When we sit down to chant our Gayatri, sit down to chant our Japa, anything, we should know, where am I going? they say in management, if you don't know where you're going, you probably won't get there. When I was a teenager, sometimes my friends and I, this is when petrol was 27 cents a gallon, we would just go for a ride, nowhere. You know, let's just get in the car and drive, nowhere. I don't think we do that now at like $4 a gallon. But we want to have a goal. What am I doing this for? And we were talking yesterday about getting rid of things, right? If there's something you really don't want, don't do it, please. Or find a way to want it. So if there's something you're doing that you don't want to do, either stop doing it or find a way to inspire yourself to do it so that you do want to do it. Does that make sense to everyone? We're meant to join Krishna in his pleasure pastimes. Now, yes, not just, our philosophy is not suffer now and go to heaven later. That is not our philosophy. You know those four people blessed by the sage? So the butcher, he says, don't live, don't die. You're miserable now. You have a miserable life now, and next life's going to be also miserable. To the prince, he said, you better keep living and not die, because you're enjoying now. After death, it will be miserable. To the non-devotee brahmachari, tapasya person, he says, you die immediately, because your life now is just suffering. But after death, you'll reap the results of your tapasya. And to the bhakta, he said, it doesn't matter, live or die. That means that we are supposed to be entering into our perfection now. And even our tapasya is supposed to be joyful. If your tapasya is not joyful, don't do it, or find a way to make it joyful. Don't do tapasya that makes you hard-hearted. No point to it. You should enjoy your tapasya. Okay? Just like if you have a good, I gave this example the other day, if you have a good friend, and your friend's having a birthday, and you're doing some tapasya, you're spending your money, and your time, and you're getting a cake, and you're decorating the room, are you suffering when you're doing that? Has everybody done this? You all have some experience. Are you suffering when you're doing that? You're not even thinking about your tapasya. Or sometimes a big festival, and we're not getting enough sleep, right? On Radhastami, I'm sure they were just hired, these guys making the flower things. I was thinking in America, you'd have to pay like $100,000 to get that done. And they're staying up all night. I'm sure they were just doing it for money. But we know we do that sometimes. Sometimes we stay up late, we're not getting enough sleep, we're fasting. Do you feel like it's suffering? No. You don't even notice the tapasya. Correct? Right? You're making flower decorations and you're cooking and it's a fast day and it's hot in the kitchen and your clothes are all sticking to you with sweat. You can hardly walk because you're sweating so much. And you don't even notice it. When you leave the kitchen, you notice, wow, I'm really sweaty. I got to go take a shower. But while you're cooking, you don't notice. So you're out on book distribution. You're just running from one person. You don't notice all of our austerity should be like that. If we're feeling, oh, so much austerity. It's something. Oh, fix it. Either don't do that austerity. Either that means you're wrongly situated. You're doing someone else's austerity. Or learn how to love the austerity. Find a way to make it sweet. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about taking vows. Did I talk about this before?
No. Mm-hmm.
Where did I talk about this recently? Somewhere. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, pretty sure it's in Bhakti Loka, talks about that you take a vow for 3 days, then like a week, and then a month, and then 3 months, and then you can renew it. And I've practiced this kind of thing for quite some time. And what I would do is take a vow for 3 days and then evaluate it. And part of my evaluation is, did I like it? So part of the evaluation is, oh, in Mayapur, in a class on Radharani, that's where I talked about it. part of the evaluation is, how did I do? Sometimes we take a vow and we don't do very well. Like Burajan Prabhu said, he took a vow on Kartik not to criticize anybody. Immediately. So I was so proud that I thought, oh, I'm going to try that. Where Burajan failed, Urmila will be successful. I love challenges, you know. So I tried one Kartik. I was actually taking a lot of vows that Kartik, and I said, I'm not going to criticize anyone. Oh my God. What happened was that Super Soul kept flagging, you understand flagging? All my critical thoughts and words. Every time I think something, I didn't even notice it before. You understand what I'm saying? And all of a sudden I became aware. This Super Soul would say, that was critical. Oh. And then, you know, half an hour later, that was critical. Oh. Okay. That was critical. Oh my God. How many do I have of these an hour, Lord? You know, and I'd open my mouth to say something, and then I'd get that was critical too. It's like, oh no. Okay. And after 2 weeks, I said, I can't do this. I said, I'm just failing constantly. I can't do it. It's too much. I'll try this again later. So sometimes you take a determination to do some tapasya and you do it and you go, I really wasn't happy. It just made my heart hard and I forgot Krishna. And all the times you look at it and say, that was great. I really enjoyed that. And then you may say, okay, I'll do it for, you know, the Thakur saying. And then you say, I'll do it for longer. Okay, do it for 3 days. I once took some tapasya, really scary tapasya. I can't say what it is. But anyway, I took a really scary tapasya. I was really, really scared. How will I do this? I tried it for 3 days, and it worked. And I did it. And actually, I forgot even on the fourth day to reevaluate. I just kept going. And like on the fifth day, I was like, oh, okay, I think I'll try this for another week. I did it for another week, and I liked it. I ended up doing it for 3 years. So every 3 months, I would look at it and say, how did I do? Could I actually maintain it? And Prabhupada says it's nectar devotion about not taking on things, not over-endeavoring. And the way Prabhupada describes over-endeavoring, the nectar devotion, is not taking on spiritual vows that you can't maintain. He doesn't talk about buying too big of a house or marrying 5 wives or something like that. He talks about not taking on excessive spiritual vows. So that you look and see, what am I happy with doing? And what can I maintain? And do that. And gradually evaluate. All right. And then, so that's the real reason he comes is for his own pleasure. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also says the real reason he comes in text 35 is to rejuvenate the hearing and chanting process. And I love the word rejuvenate. You all know what rejuvenate means? What does juvenile mean? A child. So rejuvenate. Such a nice word. To make young again. When things become adharmic, when things become old, just like some of us here in this room are becoming old. That's why I have to keep moving my legs this way. Right? Are you becoming old? Yes. And you? Yes. So we would love to be rejuvenated like that Chaivan Muni, who went in the... Of course, youth has its own problems, but anyway, it would be nice to have... I don't think I'd want to be... I don't want the mentality of a 16-year-old, thank you very much. But it would be nice to have a youthful body. Right, to be rejuvenated, an old body is not fun. Prabhupada would talk about his old body. He said, he said when he was young, he was jumping in the waves, and now he can't do that anymore. When your body gets old, it flashes up little signs periodically. Sorry, that software does not run on this machine anymore. That software has expired. And he was like, I can't do that anymore. Right. So to rejuvenate, they used to have these yagyas where they'd kill a cow or a horse and it would come out of the fire as a calf or a foal would come out in a young body, and everybody would see this miracle and say, oh, the Brahmins are potent. So to rejuvenate hearing and chanting, we're all so attracted to youth. Everyone is attracted to youth. Why? It's full of such energy. So much energy, right? Children are universally attractive. I mean, unless you're a really sour person. I've met a few people who just hate children, but that's very unnatural. And children are very attractive. I mean, even animal children. I was walking here and there was this little baby monkey. It was so cute. Youth is very attractive. Ajam Purana Purusham Nava Yoganam Cha. Krishna is eternally youthful. It's part of his attractiveness. Krishna doesn't have, you know, gray hair and sagging cheeks. And people say to me, Urmila, you've lost weight. I said, no, my face just dropped. So Krishna doesn't get, he doesn't become, I had a saying the other day, there's no 80, 90-year-old person that's beautiful. This isn't. So, what to say? So rejuvenate, to make hearing and chanting full of youthful, attractive energy. And we do this also in our own lives, right? Just like we have these japa retreats and kirtan retreats, and just like you're coming here, what is the purpose? To rejuvenate your hearing and chanting. That's what you're, isn't that what you're all trying to do? Isn't that why you're here? I hope that's why you're here. Something related. So that's, and if you think about the people who are very attractive in society, the icons of society, they're youthful. They have the beauty of youth, the energy of youth, the idealism and hopefulness of youth, the playfulness of youth. And Prabhupada comments in this regard that especially as Lord Chaitanya, Krishna appears to rejuvenate this hearing and chanting process. And Prabhupada also makes the point that hearing and chanting implies the concept of authority. Hearing, you must hear from some authority. Those are Krishna's reasons for coming. Okay, we're going to look at now some contradictions and bewilderments in Krishna's coming. And Srila Prabhupada refers to these as contradictions, that they appear to be contradictions. So the word contradict, dict means to say, contra means against. It seems that you're saying one thing and then you're saying something else. So Krishna is full of contradictions. Like Ishopanishad, he's far away, but he's very near. He walks and he doesn't walk. Krishna has no veins, and yet we'll read in the next chapter how Bhishma is wounding him. How are you going to wound the Lord? Right? They're wounding Lord Nityananda. Alright, the first contradiction we're going to look at is from 28. That Krishna is impartial, and yet we already said he comes to favor his devotees. Now in 28, the impartiality is mentioned. In 29, Srila Prabhupada says something really astonishing. He says it's not a fact that Krishna is partial to his devotees. Whoa. Something that we've been hearing since the day we came to the Hare Krishna movement is that Krishna is partial to his devotees. But Prabhupada says, in regard to text 29, he's not partial to his devotees, and the example is given of Putana, that she became a mother in Vrindavan too, although she certainly was not a devotee. In 28 again, it's compared, Prabhupada compares, and Mr. Chakravarti Thakur also compares Krishna to the sun. The sun is not partial. If you're not just like, I have this hat because I have Russian ancestry and my skin is not designed for India. But that's not the sun's fault that I'm not getting any sunshine on my face. That's because I'm wearing a hat. I can't blame the sun. Or if you stay inside with your shades drawn, that's not the fault of the sun. Or if you're an owl and you only come out at night, that's not the fault of the sun. The sun is not partial. It's not that the sun hates the nocturnal animals. So Krishna is also like that. Now, this fact of Krishna's mercy being everywhere to everyone and not being partial, I find for myself to be very enlivening and very depressing. Enlivening because that means that it's there for me now, here and now, always. Depressing because that means my own lack of advancement is entirely my own fault. You know, generally, my mind tells me, well, the reason that you're not a pure devotee is just you're unlucky. Other people are just luckier than you. So-and-so Devi Dasi, so-and-so Das, so-and-so Maharaj, who are obviously more Krishna conscious than me, well, they got some sort of special mercy that's not available to me. And that's why they're Krishna conscious. It's Krishna's partiality. Does your mind ever tell you this sort of thing? So my mind regularly, it's one of the lies my mind regularly feeds me. It's not your fault. It's not your responsibility. There's just something special about those other people. They can do it, but you just can't. You have to wait for another life, you wretched, fallen, useless person. You know, and they're all wonderful. And when I read these things about Krishna being impartial, and I think it's actually there for me too, always, everywhere. I was speaking to one very senior Vaishnava about entering into higher realms of bhakti, actually here in Vrindavan. I was speaking to this devotee, not this trip, another trip. And this devotee said, my entrance into Raganuga Bhakti happened while flying in an airplane in America. So the mercy is everywhere. The mercy is not only in Vrindavan. It's not only during a VIG class. It's not only when you're swimming in Radhakund. It's not only when you're chanting your japa in the morning. It's everywhere, always. We were speaking that, you know, we tend to think, let me arrange my circumstances. Let me arrange my circumstances. The main circumstance we should be arranging is the receptivity of our heart, our desire for that mercy. Frankly, we're getting that mercy directly in response to our own desire for it. Earlier in the first canto, Srila Prabhupada says, the only thing the unhappy materialist needs is desire. That's all. And we can think, well, I desire. Well, okay. But do I desire that only, or do I desire that among so many other things? Yes, I want Krishna Prema and I want ice cream. Or whatever it is that we want. I want Krishna Prema and I want a nice hot shower that's a real shower. Or I wish I had a washing machine and I didn't have to wash my clothes by hand. And all these other silly things that I want. I want a nice, comfortable life in the material world with a body that works and nice friends and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I'd like Krishna Prema too. Like a dessert. Do I only want Krishna Prema? Do I actually want, we'll talk about this in the last category, do I actually want Krishna Prema? Or do I really want just to go to heaven and Goloka Vrindavan sounds nicer than Swarga, so I really would like to go there. Or do I really want liberation because I'm tired of my back hurting or my head hurting or my mother-in-law yelling at me or whatever my problems are in life? So Krishna is not partial. He's not partial even to his devotees. He's simply reciprocating with them. Eko Bhagunam Yovidadati Kama. So this is also very liberating. It means that as soon as I desire, Krishna will reciprocate with me. He will, he will, he will, he will, he will. He's already there. It's already there. He's already in my heart. I don't have to go anywhere or do anything particularly except desire. And everything we're doing is just simply to spark that desire. This hearing the Bhagavatam, this chanting our japas, seeing the deity, serving the devotees, preaching the mission. Everything has one purpose and one purpose only. And that is to awaken that desire and fan that desire until that desire is so overwhelming that all other desires are finished. And we are willing to do anything to get that desire, and anything we give, we consider a very insignificant price. That is the purpose of everything in sadhana bhakti. That's the only price, isn't it? Rupa Goswami says, it's the only price. Intense desire, intense greed. Okay, another contradiction. So first contradiction was Krishna comes to favor the devotees. We said that. He comes to favor the devotees and to kill the demons. But he's impartial. Seems contradictory. For Krishna, there's no friend, there's no enemy. We were talking about that with Uttara. You're my real savior because you have no envy. I mean, I like people because they're nice to me. Who are my friends? People who are nice to me, they do things for me, they help me. My enemies are those who do nasty things to me and hurt me. Neutral are people who just don't do anything. Krishna doesn't have friends and enemies like that. Nobody can do something nice for him or mean to him. Just. But Eko Bhavanam Yo Vidadati Kama. He gives everybody what they want. He's like a very indulgent parent. Okay, next contradiction in text 30. There's another one in 28, but we'll do that after a break. He's born and yet he's unborn. So Prabhupada commenting on this says, Krishna says he's born. Janma karma chame divyam. He uses the word janma. Krishna says janma. We call it janmastami. Of course, another place he says srijam yaham, I manifest. But also janma. But he's unborn. Of course, as Krishna, Krishna is not born like the ordinary child. He appears as Vishnu and then takes the form of a baby. But even if he's apparently born, I don't know, like with Ramachandra, how he was born, but still he's unborn. Now, of course, all of us are also unborn. Na jayate mriyate. We are all also unborn. However, I don't know about any of you, but I was forced to enter a mother's womb, and I was forced to be pushed out of my mother's womb. And I'll probably go through many, many more. And that's forced. I mean, it's forced because I want it, but that's another thing. Krishna's not forced. I'm under the laws of nature. He's the controller of the laws of nature. So the criminal enters the prison house, and the governor enters the prison house, but they're not both entering the prison house in the same way. They may both enter through the same door. The prisoner is forced. Of course, the prisoner did things to be forced. A normal government doesn't just grab people off the streets and put them in prison. I mean, some despotic governments have done that, but generally, a good government, if you're a good citizen, you don't have to worry that you're just going to be picked out of your house and thrown in jail. So you can say the prisoners are not really forced to enter the prison. They're entering the prison due to their own desires and behavior. So in one sense, I'm not really forced to take birth. I'm taking birth because I want to. But in another sense, I'm forced. Although the prisoners want to do criminal activities, they really didn't want to go to jail. So I want to enjoy the world, but I don't want to suffer. I don't see that they go together, that I can't have one without the other, because I'm trying to enjoy something false. It's like if I say, I want to eat this, but I don't want to get a stomach ache. it doesn't make any sense. If I eat this, I'm going to stomach it. So that's, I want to enjoy the world, but I don't want to suffer. No, I must suffer. I have this material desire, but I don't want to take birth. Well, the only way to get this material desire fulfilled is to have a material body. So if you have this desire, you're forced to have a material body to get it. So Krishna, not having any material desires, is not born. He enters the prison of the material world and walks on the earth. He leaves footprints on the earth. The demigods don't have their feet touch the ground. Krishna leaves footprints on the earth, but he's not born. And Krishna, that's in text 30 and text 32. Then also in text 30, that Krishna works although he's inactive. So we work again because we have to. Krishna has set up this world so that all of us have to eat. And having to eat forces us to work. It's also very difficult to live without shelter, and we work to maintain our shelter. But a vast majority of our time and energy is used up by the fact that we have to eat. So either we're growing food and harvesting the food and preparing the food and cleaning up after the food, or we're working at some job to give us money so we can buy the food, or even if we're doing work in a temple, we may be thinking, well, at least I get some prasadam. So a lot of our energy is going into work to get food and often to get shelter. So we have to work. Krishna says that in the Gita, no one can maintain their physical body without work. Of course, the great Paramahamsas, they may not work, like that python living devotee that Prahlad Maharaj found. There is a state of consciousness where you will get what you need without work. But of course they're doing a different kind of work, one could say. But anyway, Krishna doesn't need to work, yet he is working. And therefore, the question is, are Krishna's incarnations as Varaha and Nrisimha, are they real? Are they truth? I mean, if Krishna doesn't have a material body and he's unborn and he's inactive, then what are these incarnations? So that there are impersonalists who say that these incarnations are also illusion. It's very nicely discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That some of the impersonalists, they say that all concepts of personality, either my personality or Krishna's personality, are just products of ignorance. But Kunti says, no, these are actually true. How do we know that Krishna's incarnations are true? The evidence given is that the liberated souls like to hear about them. And why would liberated souls want to hear about anything that's false? So just like in New York, there's a diamond district. I think it's 47th Street. We go from one shop to another, to another. So they don't deal in cubic zirconia. You know what cubic zirconia is? Imitation diamond. What do you speak of a piece of glass? Like if you go to Lloyd Bazaar, you can buy some jewelry for your deities, but the little pieces of color are really just cut glass. They're not even rock, they're not even stone. It's false. But the diamond dealers on 47th Street, they don't deal in that. If you bring them some piece of glass or even a cubic zirconia, they'll say, I'm sorry, we don't deal in that. Or I was having some work done at a jeweler in town, and I said, can you turn this from a pendant to a ring? And he said, what kind of gold is this? Is it 14, 18, 22? Right? Here they only deal with 22. They don't deal with 14. You understand? So the great souls, they don't deal with things that are false. How do you know Krishna's pastimes are true? Because they're listening to them. Now, there's research that shows that human beings are not convinced of things by facts. Now, we might all like to say, but I am. But that's not the research. The research, in fact, is that when we're given a list of facts, all those facts do is make our previous position stronger. And we see this even in ISKCON, you know, if somebody says, oh, you know, we should just have Ritvik gurus, and if you give them the facts, it doesn't change anything. Have you noticed this? Have you noticed when you try to argue with people and you get all kinds of facts that they very rarely change their mind? Now, we probably don't think it's true about ourselves, but if it's true about everybody else, guess what? It's probably true about me, too. So you know what changes our mind? Two things change our mind. Stories. And hearing from an authority that we trust. So if some authority we trust comes and says, oh, actually it's like this, then we'll accept. This is the psychological research. Or stories will change our mind. So this is the argument given. How do we know Krishna's pastimes are true? Well, just see who is listening to them. What kind of people are listening to them? Like we talk about Mahaprabhu, who was so strict about his dealings with women. Of course, he had that half associate. We never hear about how he associated with his half associate. I've asked many people, no one's given me an answer. But generally, his dealings with women were from a distance. The women would offer respects from a distance. Even, what was that devotee? Parameshwar was his name, I think. Some devotee who came to visit Mahaprabhu, and he said that his wife had also come. And he didn't even use her name. He used the name of his son, whatever his son's name was, can't remember the name. Like, Madhava's mother is also here. And Mahaprabhu was thinking, oh, I shouldn't hear the name of a woman. It wasn't even her name. But he thought, oh, this devotee is so affectionate to me. He knows me from Navadvip, and he's speaking very casually. So he didn't protest. So strict. Right? But Mahaprabhu was enjoying hearing about the gopis, their activities with Krishna, which appear to be erotic. So Mahaprabhu didn't want to see a wooden carving of a woman, but he would hear about the gopis. So if somebody as strict as Mahaprabhu is hearing about the gopis, it must not be material. So same principle here. Okay, but a few more things on this topic. Please take a 10-minute break. And those of you who are feeling tired, please get some sun. Our sleep-wake cycle is determined to a large extent by light.